Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Every critically thinking American should be truly ashamed of the astonishing hypocrisy with which the U.S. government conducts itself, and particularly with its foreign policy. I've been tirelessly pointing out the true nature of the U.S.-backed Saudi blockade and the bombing campaigns that are carried out under a guise of altruism, and how the current and past administration were not only well aware of the current atrocities being committed and turning a blind eye, but are playing an integral role in the execution of these despicable acts. Just as the executive branch is taking part in and allowing this to carry on, Congress is just as complicit. Despite the recent political outcry to end the horror that is the attempted illegal invasion and regime change of Yemen, for purely political and geostrategic reasons, they have been well aware of what this ill-begotten war has wrought since 2015. And are only just now beginning to feign shock and horror that they allowed and created to happen. This is largely due to concern for their political careers and pressure from their constituents brought on by independent media coverage, and has little, if at all, to do with actual concern for the over 18 million lives that are currently flirting with starvation and the over 50,000 that have already been killed. Even as the U.S. oligarchy has utterly and unequivocally stood and defended Saudi Arabia and the heinous acts it commits on an almost daily basis, regardless of just how obvious an authoritarian monarchy and leading human rights violator that it is, the Saudi government has continued to strike civilian targets and infrastructure with near impunity. As Hussein al-Bukhadi, as you remember from an interview I recently did with him, just reported yesterday from the ground, for our first story of the day, one written by me after being contacted by Hussein from the ground in Yemen. This one, a very important story, which I hope we can really spread out there, entitled, "Two More Buses Full of Civilians Bombed in Yemen, While the Government and Its Media Focus on One Man." So two more buses were just bombed by U.S.-backed Saudi airstrikes in Jabal Ras, South Hodeidah, leaving 20 civilians killed and 26 more injured. And I've seen increasing numbers since then. These were the preliminary reports. So as usual, we will find more people who die from the injuries and even more who were killed that we didn't know about. Civilians, innocent. One bus was full of internally displaced persons, IDPs, likely displaced due to previous airstrikes. And the other bus was full of elder Umrah pilgrims on their way to Mecca and Medina. What's even more insulting to those who have lost loved ones at the hands of the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition is that despite how many times the Saudis claim to be doing their best to minimize civilian casualties and swear that most of the deaths are unintentional or accidents, their attacks on civilians only continue to increase, as we've pointed out on this show repeatedly. One such attack on a bus, largely full of women and children, was bombed the same day that the Saudis pleaded their innocence at the UN. The hypocrisy it takes to do something like this. Another was hit the same day that Mike Pompeo vouched for their support, or their supposed efforts, to minimize civilian deaths on the world stage. As he was saying such things, they bombed buses. And as the excuses and claims of innocence continue from both the Saudis and the U.S., just 2 days ago, as we recently reported on, the Saudis intentionally, bin Salman himself even openly stated that he will continue to deliberately target women and children because he wants the Yemeni people to shiver when they hear the name Saudi Arabia. These are the people that the United States support. Yet the U.S. oligarchy wants you to believe that they care about civilian lives. When they, you know, this, you know, while currently they obfuscate their overt efforts and their allies to maximize the suffering of these same people. And they want you to believe that the Saudis are doing all they can to kill less children, as if such a measure, even if genuine, were a commendable step while continuing to take innocent life. Just kill a little bit less children and we'll look the other way. Or we will anyway, as it seems. The sad truth is that the civilian suffering that we're watching today is not a byproduct of their war. It was always part of the plan. This is the same model used in past U.S.-led regime change efforts all over the world, as we have repeatedly pointed out. Create a situation for the average civilians that is so unbearable by way of bombings, starvation tactics, and even bio and chemical warfare, point of fact, which we will touch on today. That is all compounded the more by the subsequent economic sanctions designed to increase this suffering, so that they revolt out of sheer desperation and a desire for the suffering to end in any way possible. This created chaos, ridiculously, is then used as the very justification for further intervention. For humanitarian purposes, of course, we have no doubt. This disingenuous act can be seen in how the current administration continues to ignore what is happening to the Yemeni people and stands with the Saudi government in spite of repeatedly egregious attacks on civilians, yet makes grand statements about repercussions when one man is killed by the very same government. Something we need to rectify with ourselves, to realize that one person can draw such ire while thousands of people die. All the evidence of this story seems to suggest that the U.S. allowed this kidnapping of Khashoggi and his murder to take place. Yet despite all the current posturing, it's more than likely that they will ultimately, nothing will happen. In the way of repercussions, that is. Just as nothing has ever come to pass from U.S. promises of accountability when it comes to the Saudi kingdom in general. This is all political. Each response is reciprocal and proportionate to the amount of press a story gets, and has very little to do with morals, virtue, or the sanctity of life. Due to the fact that this man was a writer for the Washington Post, the horrendous and failing propaganda outlet that it is, it of course garnered quite a bit of negative attention, and given the world a glaring example of just how easily the U.S. allies can commit open war crimes and human rights violations and enjoy an amnesty that is not afforded to those who choose to operate independent of this U.S. empire. And this needs to be taken and run with and spread and shown far and wide so this hypocrisy can be put on display. And in a related story coming from Moon of Alabama, who always does an excellent job of highlighting the ridiculous nature of U.S. policy, this one entitled, Saudis Must Cough Up Billions to Settle Khashoggi Case. And this is indeed how this seems to be playing out. Now he begins by saying the Khashoggi case will be moved off the news pages even faster than assumed, as we also said. A CNN correspondent just tweeted, according to an Erdogan spokesperson, at the request of Saudi Arabia, a joint working group will be established to uncover the events surrounding Jamal Khashoggi. And Moon of Alabama points out, translation, our Sultan received a sufficient down payment to start negotiating about the burial of the case. And his prediction, Erdogan will use the joint working group to squeeze as much as he can out of the Saudis. A deal may even include a political settlement of the Saudi blockade of Erdogan's sponsor, Qatar. And this, of course, is his prediction. But we understand that way Turkey's integral role in all of this, and that they're not one to be trusted. It seems interesting that they're the ones trying to call this out. It may indeed be a squeeze play to try to make, to, you know, put more in advance on their agendas, or just put themselves in a advantageous position in regard to politics today. Now, yesterday, 22 senators signed a request to Trump to investigate the Khashoggi case under the Global Magnitsky Act. The Trump administration has 120 days to finish the investigation and to report back to the Senate. Any person or organization found to be involved in the kidnapping and possible murder of Khashoggi could then come under U.S. sanctions, seeming to ignore the complete U.S. complicity in this entire story. Those 120 days are the time frame for Erdogan to manipulate the situation and essentially extort the Saudi crown prince. It will cost billions, as he points out, to purchase the video of the Khashoggi killing the Turkish government claims to have. Erdogan will not be the only one to profit from this issue. The Senate moves to give Trump enormous leverage over the Saudis, and he will definitely use this. And this is just one perspective in this whole thing, but considering the lack of follow-up and accountability for the Saudis in many past crimes, it seems likely, And how this resolves ultimately, or lack thereof, will give us some definite insight. And interestingly, in a related story, it seems quite clear that the U.S. is already creating the narrative to smear Khashoggi in preparation for the lack of repercussions that seem all but inevitable, to make him out to be a supporter of terrorism, which may indeed be true. But at this point, it's largely irrelevant. I mean, the guy was a Washington Post writer, as if we need any more reason to believe he was a real POS. But the point is how this went down and how the U.S. allies operate with impunity when other nations are held to international norms and laws, you know, like presenting evidence in a court of law, not just kidnapping and chopping into pieces those accused of a crime. But we will be eagerly awaiting what we assume will happen. Nothing, ultimately. And by the way, here's a quick tie-in with the Saudi monarchy and the crackdown of independent media, which I thought was very relevant today. Another article coming out, the Saudi prince now owns more of Twitter than Jack Dorsey does. I found this to be wildly relevant to everything going on today. So Prince Alawid bin Talal bin Abdulaziz Al Saud, who in 2011 invested $300 million in the social network with Twitter, now owns 34.9 million shares of Twitter's common stock, according to the new regulatory filing. At nearly 5.2%, his stake in the company is now, in fact, larger than that of Jack Dorsey. Very relevant to understand this. Now, for a second, consider what would happen if that was a Russian diplomat or a Russian, someone involved in the Russian government. Think about that would be absolutely not okay. But the point being, regardless, it's a U.S. ally, so it's okay. But understand the ability they must have to be able to stifle actual criticism of what they're doing, which kind of can segue into the concept of just anti-establishment discussion, seeing how aggressively the U.S. supports their allies today. Something to consider in regard to all of the crackdown on independent thought today. In another story in regard to foreign policy, this one I found to be very important, something we've been covering in depth since this was the next installation of this story was being broadcasted as a potential false flag coming in Syria. This coming from South Front, entitled "Russia Has Data on Upcoming Chemical Weapons Provocations in Idlib," according to an OPCW envoy. Very interesting story. So Russia's permanent representative to the Organization of the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, the OPCW, Alexander Shlugin, told the news agency TASS, T-A-S-S, on October 12th that he has obtained intelligence that militants are plotting chemical weapons provocations in the Syrian province of Idlib. He stated this, that this information is coming constantly. He said, quote, "We have held several meetings at the OPCW. I applied to the technical secretariat and handed them detailed information about a provocation in the Idlib province. We know surnames of the armed opposition leaders and the number of barrels with chlorine," he said. "We were hoping that the secretariat would raise its voice, but it hasn't happened," he added. Interesting. Always interesting to point out. I mean, we shouldn't take any of these claims at face value. The fact that he's an envoy for the OPCW should give us a step in that direction. But the fact that they're presenting evidence to back up these claims, something we never see from the other side, should at least give you some insight into what we should be trusting more. But question everything, as we always say. Everybody has their agendas in this play, but it seems very clear, especially based on the fact that we know these kind of things have happened in the past, verifiably so, and that they've lied about them, the other side. Interesting. So Shlugin said that the provocations are highly likely, regardless of the fact that, quote, "the creation of a buffer zone and militants pull out from Idlib are under consideration." According to the diplomat, militants could become involved in something at any moment. Previously, the Syrian-Iranian-Russian alliance had repeatedly warned of possible chemical weapons provocations, which we've reported on, in the province of Idlib and nearby areas controlled by the militants. These provocations, according to the alliance, will be aimed at sabotaging the deconfliction zone and triggering a military action by the U.S.-led bloc against the Damascus government. Now, an important tie-in with this story is something we recently covered on the fact that it was reported that ISIS militants had stolen chlorine canisters from Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, the al-Qaeda-based group controlling Idlib at the moment, supported by the U.S. government. interesting to think about how this is developing. As we pointed out, there was divided within the al-Qaeda-based group in Idlib on whether or not they wanted to back down or continue, and maybe that triggered the United States' support to include another proxy group to take the chlorine to carry out this kind of an effect. This is my personal opinion based on the facts at hand. Come to your own conclusions. But it seems very interesting to see this continue with now more information coming out that there is in fact something going forward. And that this is in regard to stopping the demilitarization zone. So it's just very interesting development here. At the end of the day, this has very clearly happened in the past, and it very clearly would happen again for the purpose of creating the justification to continue what the U.S., Israel, and all of their allies have wanted in Syria and Iran for a very long time, which is to overthrow their elected governments and put in their puppet regimes. So we'll keep track of the story, as always. But it seems increasingly damning that something is about to take place. Moving on to the next story coming from Moon of Alabama, another great story in regard to the idea of the Korean peace talks, which has kind of taken a back seat to all of the other discussions going on today, but is very important to understand how this is developing and the hypocrisy at play, as always, from the side of the U.S. oligarchy in regard to these topics. This is entitled, U.S. Bullying of the Two Koreas Endangers Its Alliance and Peace, of course. So the Trump administration is haranguing South Korea for taking steps the U.S. has essentially already agreed to, which is wildly hypocritical. The idea is that with the meeting they recently had where they signed these steps that were going to take place, which we pointed out then was likely not going to be followed. It was just kind of an informal agreement, not necessarily something they had to hold themselves to. However, there were steps in this process, which the international community has all acknowledged. That, of course, there were steps one and two, which were supposed to be establishing diplomatic relations and a peace agreement, which would then lead to denuclearization, which they all agreed on at this meeting. But of course, the U.S., ignoring the agreed upon terms, immediately jumped right to making demands about denuclearization, which they then used to justify not moving forward with the deal, saying they're not doing what they're supposed to, which is patently false. Again, which has been acknowledged by the international community. President Moon Jae-in of South Korea also insisted on following the signed agreements. But when he recently took steps to fulfill the inter-Korean Panmunjom Declaration, as it was called, which Trump had endorsed at the time, the U.S. intervened. Moon needs to lift some sanctions his country had put onto the North in 2010 to allow for the resumption of aid to North Korea. But Trump rejected that in a rather humiliating way. Quote, he said, well, they won't do it without our approval. He said this in the Oval Office on Wednesday when asked about the reports from Seoul and considering the idea. He said they do nothing without our approval. Speaking about South Korea, which of course they were wildly offended by, saying that this violates their sovereignty, which even if they were aware this was the case, to say that point blank is simply pointing out that you do what we say. We're in control of South Korea, which we already generally know this. But the way this is developing needs to be very apparent to us, that they make these agreements, these treaties, even things they're supposed to hold to, and they simply just disregard them when it suits their agenda. As we've seen with the JCPOA, with the discussion of the space treaty, all these different things that are supposed to hold them, even the chemical weapons treaty in regard to things they're doing today, or biological, they just simply don't care. Is because they don't feel like they're held to these. The same way that John Bolton will threaten the International Criminal Court with sanctions and actual criminal action if they even dare to investigate the United States, as if they're somehow above this. It's important that we recognize how these things develop, and especially with North Korea, as I've always said from the beginning, peace is not the agenda here. The appearance of such peace is what they definitely want, but they never intended to follow through with it. And clearly, after they disregard their own deal, violating the steps involved, and then telling South Korea they have to back down. So, again, we'll keep following with the same story, but it's likely not going to develop in any kind of fruitful way, despite all of the claims of a Nobel Peace Prize for Trump and his peace, and it's ridiculous. Moving on to the next story, and the final story of the day, a very alarming story for me, something that's more of a follow-up, which we talked about, in regard to both the allegations of the Georgia Biochemical Laboratory and the other 30-plus biolaboratories around the world that the U.S. operates, despite that being something they pretend they don't do, verified by the DOD of all places, in regard to the idea of the Insects Allies Project, run by DARPA of all places, under the guise of helping farmers and their crops and these different ridiculous nature. And we talked about the scientist who spoke out about that, saying that's really a guise for a weapon. This is a follow-up story from globalresearch.ca that adds some heavy weight to that those allegations. Now, this is entitled Video, The Pentagon's Insect Army. And there is a video in this, but it's in French, I believe. But the information in this article is important. It's essentially based on the same allegations, but the way that they lay this out, I felt was very important for us to talk about a second time because of what this really means. And with all the things we're talking about today, the violations of treaties, specifically things like the chemical weapons treaties and the biological treaties, which we're going to talk about in a moment, but everything else for that regard, doing what they think is necessary for their national security, of course. And this seems more than likely this is something they would try and do. So this is, again, what they talk about in the beginning of the article. They say swarms of insects transporting genetically modified infectious viruses, which is fact, by the way, that's something they're acknowledging, but for a different reason, attack the agricultural crops of a country and destroy its food production. This is not a science fiction scenario, but a plan that is actually being prepared by DARPA, the Pentagon's Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, that's coming from these scientists. Now, the fact that these insects are being genetically engineered with infectious viruses to be used on these plants is a fact. They've openly talked about this, but they claim it's for protection of the plants of the United States. They will infect these plants with something that will help them withstand chemicals or whatever their claim is, which we talked about in a recent show. But and then they even themselves acknowledged offhandedly, like, well, yeah, I guess this could be used as a weapon, but we never thought of that. If you believe that, wildly naive. But the point is, these people are openly saying they are misleading us. And the fact that this can be used as a weapon will mean it will be used as a weapon if and when the time comes, by sending these bugs out into the world for other nations and using them to infect their crops with something else that they put in them that will destroy them and cause famine, maybe just like we're talking about in Yemen today. Very interesting. And these five scientists from one French and two German universities have revealed this information in Science, the publication, one of the world's most prestigious scientific reviews. In their editorial published on October 5th, they cast serious doubts on the idea that DARPA's research entitled Insect Allies was intended only for the use declared by the agency. The protection of U.S. agriculture against pathogens by using insects as the vectors of genetically modified infectious viruses, that's their claim, which in and of itself sounds horrifying. Understand that there's ways that this could get wildly out of control. These viruses are transmitted to plants and modify their chromosomes, which is crazy. This capacity, as declared by the five scientists, appears to be very limited. So the point is they're making is that even the thing they're claiming seems to be almost a joke to how limited it is to what they're actually trying to accomplish. And the real plan is much more alarming. However, they claim the program is widely perceived as an effort to develop biological agents for hostile purposes and their means of delivery. In other words, a new form of biological weapon. This, of course, violates the Biological Weapons Convention, which came into effect in 1975, but which has remained inactive mainly due to the refusal of the United States to accept inspections of their own laboratories. Again, exactly what we're talking about. Things they hold everyone else to and refuse to do the same. Ask yourself why. The five scientists specify that, quote, easy simplifications could be used to generate a new class of biological weapons, weapons that would be extremely transmissible to susceptible crop species due to insect dispersion as a means of delivery. Point being, it could get wildly out of control and spread far beyond what they want to focus it on. And this should be alarming to all of us. It's the same concept of thinking of the way GMOs could dramatically affect our food, which it may weigh well in the near future. But this is something that should be scary to all of us, not just because they're going to violate a convention and attack people with biological weapons, but for the reasons that they don't know ultimately the repercussions of doing something like this. They may think they do, but without real world examples, who ultimately knows? At the end of the day, all of this stuff, from what's going on in Yemen, what's happening with Saudi Arabia, with the weapons they're creating and the lies we're being told, the false flags in Syria. We need to begin to recognize the real picture here and what these people are capable of and why we need to continue to speak out about these things and spread the word. as I've said before, seems pretty clear to me that we are increasingly on the wrong side of history here. And we as Americans and people who support the real Americans of this country, we need to continue to point that out as the silent majority, the real majority, even though we may not realize that today. So keep that in mind. Make sure you stay tuned on this very channel for a follow-up TLAV research and review. Well, I'll more or less be talking about these same topics today and getting some questions from the audience. So tune in, join me, discuss these things. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.